All right. So I guess we'll get the show on the road. Are you okay, Brian and Travis? Ready?
Yeah, we're good to go.
All right. So thank you to everybody that took the time out to join and took the time to submit some questions for this call today. We have Brian Soderberg, president and co-founder of Zipper Interactive, on the line, and Travis Steiner, the lead designer for SOCOM 4. So I'm going to turn it over to Brian, and he's going to give you a little overview of the studio. And, you know, their mission, and then Travis is going to talk a little bit about the game SOCOM, and then we'll go through some questions that you guys submitted, and then at the end, if there's some time before the hour is up, we'll open it up for a little free-form Q&A. So without further ado, Brian.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Yeah, once again, thanks for giving us this opportunity to speak with you guys. It's always fun to tell people about Zipper and especially the SOCOM franchise and now our newest title in the franchise, SOCOM 4. Like Scott mentioned, I'm Brian Soderberg, president and co-founder. I'm going to first give you just a quick overview of Zipper in our studio, who we are, a little bit about the SOCOM franchise, and then I'm going to hand you off to Travis Steiner, our SOCOM 4 lead designer, to give you more specifics on the game. So we founded Zipper back in 1995. It's amazing we've been doing this for this long, and we're in Redmond, Washington, in a tech center just down the street from Microsoft and Nintendo. We've got 145 employees here. The team has a really strong technical background. Some of us actually come from a military defense background, so a lot of expertise in shooters and just overall authentic military type experience and gameplay. Team, like I said, is very strong technically, and even back when we were doing the defense simulators, we did networked multiplayer training systems. So SOCOM and this style of game was really right up our alley. So we've developed 14 titles to date in, I guess, about 16 years. In our last seven, six of which were SOCOM franchise titles, and our most recent title, MAG, and now SOCOM 4. And all of our titles have had a very strong multiplayer component to the games, which has really given us a solid base and allowed us to really evolve and you know, end up with a really robust multiplayer experience, especially now for SOCOM 4. So we're definitely best known for the SOCOM Navy SEAL franchise, you know, with the seven, actually with the six SOCOM titles so far, we've sold well over 10 million copies. Certainly it's what we've been most proud of. I think our first SOCOM title was released in 2002. So it's been a great run and just really excited to continue it with SOCOM 4. One thing that's been important to us is through the entire SOCOM franchise is to stay true to our core pillars. And I think that's what's really helped to make the SOCOM titles popular and to allow us to gain a real solid following. And to this day, we have a very vocal, excited audience, you know, looking forward to new SOCOM titles. So these pillars previously and especially now for SOCOM 4 have been, number one, team-focused gameplay. It's definitely not just a run-and-gun style of gameplay. You can play that way, and it's a fun experience that way, but to be you know, actually very effective, you want to use team play, whether it's commanding your teammates in single player or communicating and you know, really setting up tactics with the actual people in your multiplayer teams. So tactical gameplay, it's just really important to us and really differentiates us from a lot of the other shooters. Another pillar is authenticity. We originally developed the first SOCOM in cooperation with the U.S. Navy SEAL. We really actually met a lot with the SEALs and went over our missions and our basic maneuvers and gameplay with actual SEALs, and so that helped us ensure that the game was quite authentic. And lastly, innovation. It's a key pillar, really across single player and multiplayer. we've brought a lot of new things to our multiplayer game. We are the first to take the PS2 online with the first iteration of SOCOM. And like I said, throughout all of this, it's really been all about tactical team-based gameplay. So that's kind of the quickie update on Zipper and the franchise. So now we're very excited to bring out SOCOM 4 on the PlayStation 3. You know, this is the first full SOCOM franchise title to be brought to the PlayStation 3, and it's been exciting for us to first get our MAG going on the PlayStation 3, which gave us a solid base and expertise for developing games on the PlayStation 3, and now to evolve that and really polish that technology and do everything necessary to make it maintain these franchise pillars on the powerful PlayStation 3. So when I say, you know, full SOCOM, the first full SOCOM experience, what does that mean? It's we have a very rich single-player mode, competitive multiplayer, and co-op modes. You know, beyond that, we've integrated the Move and the Sharpshooter, which really makes the experience very immersive. And another thing we did is we've done the necessary programming to support 3D display, the 3D displays. So, you know, with the game, third-person game, and using a sharpshooter and 3D displays, you really have a very immersive experience. And we're just really excited about it, and we're excited to get it out on the shelf and see what people think of it. So that's my introduction. I'm going to hand it off to Travis Steiner, our SOCOM 4 lead designer, and he'll give you a quick overview of some more of the details on SOCOM 4, and then we'll go into questions.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Well, SOCOM 4 takes place in Southeast Asia, where a violent revolution has erupted along the Strait of Malacca, which is really one of the key waterways in the world. An international peacekeeping force that was sent to safeguard the region is nearly wiped out in the initial attacks. You play the role of the operations commander. This is a new character we've added to SOCOM, really to combine some of the best elements of gameplay and storytelling. This guy is the ultimate infield battle commander. So imagine a soldier who's a squad commander. He carries a weapon. He's a proficient special forces operative. He commands troops from the front lines, but he also has the kind of command authority that would normally be reserved for some general off in a, you know, safe tent a few hundred miles away. He can call in airstrikes on demand, order real-time intelligence, and even take control of international forces in the region. So this is a great basis for both our core gameplay as well as, you know, really focusing in on a great main character in the storyline. Now, he arrives on the scene in Southeast Asia shortly before the initial wave of attacks break out, and he and a small squad of two other U.S. Navy SEALs are able to escape the initial attacks. Now, there's a handful of other survivors scattered throughout the country. There's some members on a naval ship offshore that's providing you real-time intelligence. And shortly after escaping the city, he and his small squad actually link up with surviving members of another international force in the area, members of the South Korean 707th Special Forces. And together, they actually join their team and comprise the five-man squad that you'll lead throughout the entire campaign. Now, something unique we're doing here is there is no extracting. There is no going back to the carrier in between missions, you know, for a hot shower and a warm meal. Something important we want to tell is the fact that these guys are outnumbered and outgunned, and they're staying in the field until the mission is completed. We tell the entire storyline in this one AO to really, you know, get a sense for what it's like to be these guys on the ground and having to improvise throughout this campaign. This is a six-day battle with no retreat, and they must succeed in order to prevent global catastrophe from breaking out in the region. As Ryan had mentioned, this is really an evolved SOCOM experience. We've really added a number of great new core gameplay elements while still maintaining the core values that make SOCOM what it is. Again, that team-based gameplay, authenticity, and innovation. In the single-player campaign, we have 14 diverse campaign missions. Some of the big things we've emphasized in the single-player campaign are great team commands. You know, again, this is one of the aspects that makes SOCOM unique. We wanted to really streamline the team command system and make it so any player can quickly order teammates around and improvise tactics in the middle of a firefight or even better, if they happen to ambush unsuspecting enemies. We have great new enemy, dynamic enemy AI, where they're exhibiting squad-based behaviors, doing things like flanking, bounding, providing suppressing fire for one another. So again, it adds to a higher rate of believability, but also great replayability. There's plenty of reasons to keep coming back and playing these single-player missions, because that AI is going to react to you differently each time. And I think the AI shows off great in our online co-op as well, where five players can go through a number of different scenarios. Something unique we're doing is something we call the custom campaign creation tool, which basically allows a host of a co-op game to customize a number of co-op scenarios and then string them together to create a seamless medley where you and your friends can go from one mission to the next for more of an extended co-op play session. We have two primary game modes in our online co-op. We have a mode where you're basically going through trying to neutralize a key enemy VIP in the region. So you and your team are working together as a team to locate this guy. In some cases, there's multiple enemies or they have guards, and take them down as a team. And then we also have another mode where you're working together to locate key pieces of intel in the map, and then once you've located all those intel items, you'll have a key objective that you want to take on as a group at the very end. So those are called Takedown, and the other one is called Espionage. So Takedown is the one where you take out the VIP. Espionage is the one where you're going after the key enemy intel. And I mentioned the dynamic AI behaviors, and this is key for a co-op game because, you know, even more so than single player, you're going to have players that are constantly wanting to come online and join up with their friends and play through the co-op again and again. And the great thing about the SOCOM 4 co-op is that you're going to get something unique each time you play through. The objectives and the enemy locations are randomized, and then, again, those squad-based behaviors make it so they're reacting to you differently each time. We also have some new tools in there as well that allow players to really team up and utilize their specialties in unique ways. So, you know, a lot of times people often compare SOCOM to a team-based sport where everyone's fulfilling a role in the group. And that's really dictated by the weapons you bring into battle, the gear, and your play style. And you want to mix and match those as best as possible to really maximize the potential of your squad. And something we've allowed players to do in co-op is actually use the D-pad to mark targets. So it's a great way to have in-mission communication. So an example would be if one particular member of the squad is sneaking ahead and he notices an enemy that he wants another guy in his squad to take out with a sniper rifle, he can just highlight that guy, use the D-pad, and mark the target. And then his teammate with the sniper rifle will see, oh, my buddy there sees this guy, now I see the target, I'm going to take him out. You can also use that tagging system to mark key locations in the environment if you want to reference specific locations for each team member to move to. So we're doing a lot of great things in co-op to really emphasize that replayability and that team-focused gameplay. And then lastly, you know, SOCOM has a great heritage for competitive online multiplayer. We have 32-player online multiplayer, and we have four game types, starting with suppression. That's a SOCOM standard. It's basically the objective there is just to eliminate the other team. But again, you're working together in a very cooperative manner to take out the other team. The way we have the map structured, the way the spawning mechanics work, it's not just you know, the kind of thing where you're being spawned in on one side of the map or the other like we see so often these days. You really have distinct sides of the battle, so it allows you to really group up as a team a lot better. We have Bomb Squad. If you guys have ever seen one of those big bomb defusal suits, we really wanted to use kind of that iconic image of a guy in a big bomb defusal suit as the inspiration for an online game mode. So in this particular game mode, one member of your team is the bomb technician, and your mission is to go in and defuse a series of enemy bombs. So as the bomb squad guy, you move a little slower, but you actually take more hits. You're more heavily armored. You have some great special weapons. You have an automatic shotgun and a multiple launch grenade launcher. Your teammates are going to be escorting you. They have incentive to kind of stay by your side and keep you alive so you can go and defuse these locations. And then as the opposing team, they're going to be gunning for you. You are their primary target. We also have another game mode called Last Defense. This is a game mode where each team is fighting over three key control points in the middle of the map. If either team is able to take all three of the control points, it opens up a timed opportunity for them to go in and plant an airstrike beacon on the enemy base. when this phase happens, as a defender, you're really trying to communicate and fall back to defend that location. If the defending team is able to hold that position before the time, up until the time expires, then the control points in the middle of the map will become active again, and it basically resets the map, so now everyone's fighting over the middle again. So this is a great mode, again, for encouraging team-based gameplay. You really want to work together to plan the tactics of how you're going to either defend or attack that final position, and then as well, you know, guard each other's backs as you're going after those control points. The last mode is called Uplink. In Uplink, you have one team that's trying to get in and obtain enemy intel and bring it back to their base. And as the other team, you're basically trying to stop them. So it's another one that's great for, you know, cross-team coordination. You really want to emphasize, you know, who's going to go for that data and really getting your team together and watching that guy's back as he brings it back to your base. So, again, I just want to emphasize we have a lot of different ways to play SOCOM 4, but the common theme here, again, is that they're all very team-based and they're all very authentic.
All right. So I guess thanks for the overview, guys. We're going to dive into some of the questions here that everybody submitted. The first one here reads, SOCOM 4 seems to be much more accessible than previous titles. What steps have you taken to ensure longtime fans don't feel slighted by the more accessible gameplay?
Well, I think this is a very good question. I think the key thing we want to emphasize is that, you know, we have made changes in this game, but they all maintain the core spirit of the franchise, those key values that I mentioned. So, you know, while we've updated, you know, certain core mechanics, it will still have that SOCOM feel. Again, we still emphasize the key things that have made SOCOM so much of a big hit in the past. So, you know, from a core mechanic standpoint and the every moment-to-moment gameplay, while it has an updated feel, it will feel very SOCOM. In addition to that, though, we do know that we have a great core base of, you know, hardcore fans that really love the classic SOCOM online multiplayer. And so something we wanted to do for them was actually include a number of classic mode options for those hardcore players so that it has the more traditional SOCOM feel. So when you go to online competitive multiplayer, you have a couple different ways that you can choose to play the multiplayer. You can choose standard, which includes all of the new core gameplay features that we have added to SOCOM 4. You can play custom, which I'll get into detail a little bit later. But then the other option is classic. And in classic, we've actually changed a number of settings to really give it that classic SOCOM feel. So starting with, there's no respawn. Once you've been neutralized, you're out until the round expires. So that's a key difference. It really encourages, you know, tactical play even more so and really makes you value your life. We've increased the movement speeds in this particular classic mode. There's no health regeneration, and we have push-to-talk communications. So, you know, in having open dialogue with the community and hearing some of the things they wanted to see in the forums, that all culminated to us having this classic mode that, again, I think will really appeal to not only the hardcore, you know, veterans of SOCOM, but also I think new players of SOCOM will just appreciate the kind of variety in gameplay you get between classic and standard mode.
Okay. I think, so this one has a little bit more to do with MAG and its comparisons. People are wondering what kind of influence the, you know, MAG had on the development of SOCOM 4.
Well, I think certainly MAG served as a great technological base for us getting our games up and running on the PS3. I think we learned a lot from the network technology and also seeing, you know, some of the early focus feedback from the Move implementation once it got up and running. But when it comes to core gameplay, the games are very different. They, you know, they have their own key core gameplay systems, whether that's controls, camera, the game modes themselves. SOCOM is much more about intimate, small-scale, special forces style of warfare. That's why we don't have vehicles. That's why the matches, we keep the matches to 32 players. So, you know, I would say gameplay-wise, I'd say that the traditional SOCOM games, the earlier SOCOM games we worked on, really were the things that influenced the gameplay decisions we made on SOCOM 4. And MAG was more just about getting the, you know, some of the core network technology up and running.
Sure. So what about the single-player campaign? A lot of people were saying that, you know, in previous entries of the series, SOCOM, you know, is giving gamers – it's been a little bit about single-player, but it's been a lot about multiplayer. How is SOCOM 4 focusing on creating more well-rounded single-player experience?
Well, I think it starts with story. I think that, you know, the older games had story, but there were certain, you know, design decisions we made in the older games that maybe didn't make the story, you know, come to the forefront like we're doing in SOCOM 4. So right from the get-go, we knew that we really wanted to emphasize telling a key storyline and having some really key main characters that players could identify with and also get attached to. So that was an early goal that we had. And we, you know, embarked on a number of different efforts to make that come to light. You know, starting with, you know, really working hard to have a great script and then really execute on the storytelling itself. So, you know, we had great VO and acting talent. We did some new techniques this time around, though, to really make sure those performances were as good as possible. So we actually captured all the vocal performances alongside with the motion performances, and I think that gives a much more natural and believable, you know, end product. So that was one aspect. I should mention all of the cinematics in the game are rendered real time in engine. So they have really we've been able to pull off a real high level of fidelity. So I think when you see these story cinematics, people are, you know, going to be really impressed with just the overall quality of the storytelling. Whether that's, you know, the graphics themselves, the performance of the dialogue, and also the music. I think we really wanted to, you know, music is a key component to really setting the drama within the game. We were really excited to have Bear McCreary, who was also the composer on Battlestar Galactica, come on board, and he created a great score for the game that included a lot of local instruments from Southeast Asia. So I think when you combine all those things together, along with, you know, just some of the things we wanted to focus on with this Operations Commander character and the setting of having it all take place in Southeast Asia, all that culminated to us really being able to tell much more of a great story than we've ever, you know, really intended to set out for on the earlier SOCOM games. So I think number one, that was kind of the first key difference. I think beyond that, you know, just some of the things we've embarked upon with streamlining the team command system. You know, I think that SOCOM was a bit of a pioneer on the consoles in terms of, you know, having it be a team-based tactical shooter. We always had the team command menu in the earlier games. This time around, though, we wanted to make sure those team commands were much more quick to access for players of all skill levels. You know, I think that the things we've done where we've moved all the commands onto the D-pad and they're now all very contextual makes it so anyone can be a squad leader. And I think that's something we wanted to really emphasize. And whether that's, you know, even in the middle of combat, if you're behind cover and you want to order a team into a flanking position, that's something that anyone can do. It's just a button press away. It's never been quicker and easier to be a squad leader in the middle of a firefight. And then, you know, we really wanted to not just stop there. We wanted to expand the team commands as well. So when you come into an area, if the enemy doesn't know you're there yet, you can actually lay down a series of waypoints for your teammates and a series of targets and actually customize your own tactical play. To give an example, say you come up on an enemy stronghold and you see some, you know, unsuspecting guards walking around having a smoke, you might send, you know, gold team who specializes in suppressed weaponry to flank around and actually specify which targets you want them to take out. Then maybe blue team with their heavy weapons, you can order them to a good cover location where they're going to deploy a heavy machine gun. And then you as a player can actually move to a new position where you want to maybe take out some guys. And you can get this whole big tactical play set up and then actually initiate a go command, which will have the everyone start opening fire and go execute the play. So, you know, we've both streamlined the team commands, but also expanded the kind of functionality the players can utilize there. So I think that fundamentally that team command aspect has always been central to SOCOM single player, but I think the improvements we've made are really are going to make the single player that much more enjoyable and that much more unique. And then I mentioned dynamic AI. I think that, you know, when you're talking about an authentic military game, you want that AI to be believable. You want them to look like they're actually working together as a team. And you want them to, you know, be doing unique things each time you come through the mission. So AI in general, in addition to the team commands, was a huge focal point for SOCOM 4.
So you talked about the single-player experience, and what about the cooperative experience? That's something that SOCOM 4 has. Is there a difference, you know, is there going to be a difference between cooperative and single? And just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in cooperative, let me actually walk you through what it's like to host an online cooperative game. So as a player, I can come in, and I'm going to have, I'm going to go into the online co-op mode, and I'm going to first select a scenario. So I mentioned before that we have the scenarios of takedown and espionage. So after I select a scenario, I select from one of six maps. So I'm customizing this particular overall scenario. So I select game type, the map. I can select the density of enemies. So you want to be able to adjust your enemy count depending on how many people are playing the online co-op with you. So as few as two people can be playing online co-op or as many as five. So you can adjust the number of enemies depending on how many people you have in your squad. If you really want to be ambitious, you know, you can set it to the highest setting with just two people. And then you select the difficulty. Once you've customized all those parameters, it will save out a single co-op scenario, which then you and your players, your friends, can go play. Or, again, like I mentioned before, you can then go and create another scenario and create several more scenarios and then string them together as a what we call a custom co-op campaign, where basically it'll be a medley where you and your friends will go from one mission to the next. Within the mission itself, you know, the gameplay centers around, again, dynamic AI behaviors. So what I mean by that is that our level designers have set it up so that in most cases the enemies will not appear in the same time each time through, that we have dynamic spawn locations so you never quite know where they're going to be, and their behaviors are also randomized. So really you're getting something unique each time. We want to have plenty of opportunities for you and your teammates to sneak up and plan tactics on the, you know, some of those unsuspecting enemies I mentioned. So you might, again, come across enemy fortifications. They don't know you're there yet, and you really want to work together as a co-op team to plan out how you're going to take these guys out. And then once the action starts, it's really about, you know, communicating through the open mic channel and really leveraging the strength of the squad to adjust to these enemies who are very smart and very effective. And then, in general, we usually like to, you know, cap off some of these co-op scenarios with some over-the-top encounters. We're bringing, you know, the enemy has sent out a distress signal to all their buddies, and we just really overwhelm the team with, you know, hordes of bad guys coming at you, and it really, really caps off a very exciting playthrough. So, again, for co-op, the emphasis point is really replayability. It's something that you and your friends will want to keep coming back to and playing over and over again. And that's why we chose to create our co-op in this fashion.
You started to touch upon the stealth action a little bit in your last answer. A lot of people were wondering what made you guys decide to add this stealth element into the game, and how did you go about implementing it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the SOCOM franchise overall has always had elements of stealth-based gameplay. You know, in the earlier games, it was usually you still had your squad of five, you know, five members, but you wanted to, you know, leverage shadow and foliage to, you know, get an edge on the enemy, make it so you could actually sneak up on them. And we still have those elements as well, so that's always been there. What's new in SOCOM 4 is that we actually have missions that are entirely dedicated to stealth gameplay, and we really changed the mechanics. The intention behind this was really to just get more gameplay variety in the game and emphasize other tactical aspects. Tactical gameplay can be about, you know, working together as a team to take out enemies, but just as it is in real life, sometimes tactical maneuvers are about gathering intel and actually scouting out an enemy position before you come in guns blazing. So the way this works in SOCOM 4, we have actually for what we call covert missions. And in these missions, you actually play as another member of the squad. Her name is 45. She's actually a female operative. She's a member of that 707th South Korean team that you link up with in the second mission. And she's a recon specialist. So because this five-man squad is cut off from reinforcements, they're not extracting, they need to utilize the skills of the team members they have. And being that 45 is a recon specialist, the ops commander in the story decides it would be a good idea in some cases to actually send her in at night before they conduct a primary assault to gather intel or perform a sabotage operation on a particular installation. So I'm going to give an example of this. There's a mission in the game where the enemies are about to launch a stealth frigate, and the team knows they need to go in and take it out. but they don't know what kind of fortifications they have on the installation. They need to plan out the attack and figure out what kind of weapon systems they're going to be up against. So as 40, playing as 45, you will go into that mission at night ahead of the main assault to carry out these supporting objectives. So to walk you through the moment-to-moment gameplay, imagine, it's night out, it's in this particular level, it's raining, the enemies are all on kind of, lazy guard duty, if you will, and you're sneaking around. You really want to leverage, evasive maneuvers and shadow and cover to make sure you're not seen by the enemy. We actually have a little stealth meter on the left-hand side of the heads-up display that'll give you feedback on how quiet or how stealthy you're actually being. So it's a good way for players to kind of gauge how fast they're moving and how much they need to move in and out of shadows. Once you come across enemies, you have a number of different options. Obviously, the ideal thing you want to do here is just, avoid actually starting a firefight, which you can do. There are some situations where you can do that, but you're going to have a hard time surviving. It's going to be much more challenging. What you really want to do as this lone stealth operative is find a way to either take those guys out quietly or just simply sneak around them. So if you want to sneak around them, again, you can leverage shadow and cover to try and get by the guy. We also allow you to actually throw a shell casing, which would be like a distraction, so you can lure a guy away from a particular access point. 45 carries with her a suppressed submachine gun as well as a suppressed sniper rifle, so she can also take out those guys from longer range, but you really want to make sure you get a headshot in those cases to make sure that you don't just wound them and they're able to alert their buddies. Or if you can get in close, you can execute one of our really brutal up-close stealth kills where she'll actually come up and choke the guy or slit his throat or perform a variety of up-close maneuvers that'll take the guy out quietly. Now, once an enemy has been neutralized, though, you don't want to just leave him out in the open for his buddies to walk by and see and thereby alert the entire base. You actually want to pick up the body and move it into shadows or into the bushes so that the enemies don't see it. So that's the trade-off. If you are going to kill someone, you want to make sure that you actually move the body. And so, the way these missions unfold, you're going through the area, trying to evade these guys or take them out quietly. You're looking for key enemy intel that you can take back and obtain. And then you usually have a key primary objective that's going to support the team in the main assault. So maybe it's sabotaging a particular piece of electronics that they have on the base or planting a tracking beacon. And once that primary objective has been completed, then you want to get out of that area as quietly as possible. So you're all about trying to get back to the rest of the team, where they're going to basically wait it out until daylight, gather, utilize the intel that she's gotten or the supporting objectives that she's performed, and then you as the operations commander and the full squad will come back into that mission in the daytime to perform the primary objective. So we're really excited about the gameplay variety this gives. I mean, it really adds some nice pacing and just breaks up the campaign, but really, lends itself to other kinds of tactical gameplay, which we've touched on in the previous SOCOM games, but we really wanted to emphasize more so in SOCOM 4.
Let's take a step back and look at some of the kind of more big picture things instead of just modes. So obviously motion control with the PlayStation Move is something that's new. It's also kind of new for shooters in general, trying to start using the motion control and the Move controller like this. So talk a little bit about how you're implementing PlayStation Move, how it affects aiming compared to the traditional controller, DualShock controller, and then also talk a little bit about how the sharpshooter attachment will add to the experience for Move players.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think working with the PlayStation Move has been really exciting for the entire team. It's not very often as a developer that you get to work with, an exciting piece of new hardware, new control mechanic like the PlayStation Move. We've all been building these games to work with a standard controller for a long time. So when we first got the first one in the office, it was really exciting, and just the brainstorming immediately started, just thinking about all the different ways we can utilize it. We really wanted to put a stake in the ground, though, and say, hey, we want to, as a goal, make it so the entire SOCOM 4 game can be played with the motion controller. So it's not just some mini game that we have tucked away, but actually that the full SOCOM 4 gameplay can be done with the PlayStation Move. So a number of things make that possible. As we started to utilize the PlayStation Move, we found out just how precise and accurate it is. And that is really key when you're talking about implementing motion controls in a competitive game. And I think that's one reason we haven't seen a whole lot of it in the past with other motion control devices is just, you know, with a competitive game, players demand that precision and accuracy. And the PlayStation Move definitely gets us that. The other key thing there is buttons. I mean, a game like SOCOM where you have a lot of different actions and inputs that the game requires, whether that's, you know, utilizing your weapon systems in different ways or particularly the team commands, SOCOM uses every button on the DualShock controller. And the great thing about the PlayStation Move is it has all the inputs that we need. So again, the full game can translate over. So those are the first two hardware things that we recognized that really, you know, opened up our eyes and said, hey, this is possible. We can make SOCOM 4 really work great with this. In terms of the moment-to-moment gameplay, how we've made it work is that instead of the reticle being fixed to the center of the screen, we actually detach it. And then where you point the PlayStation Move is where you're going to be aiming the reticle on the weapon, where your subsequent shots are going to be going. And then as the reticle gets near the edges of the screen, then we turn the character. So we found this is a really intuitive way to play the game. When we put it in front of players, a lot of people who don't normally play shooters have picked it up and just commented on how intuitive it is. I mean, I think it works great. I think one of the key things we've learned as we've gone along in the development process and gathered feedback is just one of the things that people really like is having a lot of custom options to really customize the sensitivity settings and the different aspects of the PlayStation Move motion controls. So we have a number of custom options in there. So, you know, a player who comes in and utilizes it for the first time might want some relatively low sensitivity settings versus our hardcore guys who are really good with it are going to want to crank those up as they get more proficient with the controller. So, again, it's been very exciting to work with. But, you know, something else that, you know, as we started to work with it, we also said, hey, it would be really cool if we could hold this thing like an assault rifle. That would really bring, you know, again, the authenticity up to even the next level. So that was a goal that we had early on, and we started brainstorming some different concepts here in the office, different ways we could have a gun controller peripheral. What are the kind of unique buttons we'd want for something like that? And actually worked in conjunction with Guerrilla Games on coming up with a couple of prototype concepts. And that's kind of how the sharpshooter gun peripheral was born. And you look at some of the buttons on there, and a lot of those came from specifically some of these early SOCOM brainstorms. The sharpshooter gun peripheral is a great way to play the game. One thing I want to really emphasize, though, is it's not just a holder for the controller. We really have treated it as a third completely unique control scheme. So, you know, you'll notice on the controller that there's a dedicated fire mode selector switch. We have a dedicated reload button. We also have a dedicated quick turn button for, you know, turning the camera even faster. So really we approached it from the ground up of saying, hey, we're not just going to copy and paste these PlayStation Move settings over. We want to customize the gameplay of the sharpshooter to really work best for the controller. So, you know, both the PlayStation Move and the sharpshooter, the best way I can describe it is it's a much more immersive way to play the game. It's very satisfying to really feel like you're in control of your weapon, really feel, you know, the different attributes of the weapon and how you're just able to feel very precise when landing those shots on the enemy forces. And you know, I think it's a great way to play the game.
You talked a little bit about immersion in the game, and I think everyone on the call probably would agree that 3D has a lot to do with that immersion in a game. And we got a lot of questions about why Zipper decided to make the game 3D enabled, and also just if there was anything interesting kind of along the way that the team was surprised about when you were, you know, designing the game to be 3D.
Well, I think 3D is certainly an exciting trend we've been seeing in the entertainment industry. I think Sony has definitely been at the forefront of it, and particularly for games. And we definitely wanted to take part in that charge and be, you know, really one of the early games that demonstrates just how effective 3D can be for gaming. So I think it was just really a desire to be on the cutting edge of that technology. I think Zipper, as a studio, has always been really a pioneer for different technologies, whether it's been, you know, a lot of the online features of the SOCOM franchise or, you know, different voice communication features. And so I think, you know, there was definitely a desire to be an early adopter of the 3D and really to showcase what it can do for games. And I think SOCOM is a great example of how it can enhance that immersion. I think for myself, the thing that surprised me the most is just what kind of what kind of great depth you get in a game like SOCOM. I think that the game itself lends itself great to 3D gameplay, particularly because, you know, we have environments that are very layered. You'll have, you know, in the background we have, you know, the missions take place in a variety of locations. We always have great depth to the scene, whether that's a dense jungle that keeps going or a big city environment. And then you have the layer of the enemies and they're taking cover. But then, you know, we've really emphasized cover in this game, and, you know, when you as a character get behind cover and it's getting blown to bits and you see little chunks flying off coming at the screen, I think it's just, it really shows off great in 3D and really just makes you feel that much more connected to that part of the environment. And then the character itself, I think being a third-person game, again, you give him more separation and more depth. And just, you know, the character himself really pops up and is able to emphasize, you know, I think your gameplay and the control of the character is much more emphasized in 3D. And then I think the last bit that I noticed when it comes to just emphasizing depth is just how nicely the HUD, the heads-up display on the game really pops out and really almost seems like it's jumping out from the TV. So, you know, when you're looking for key bits of info on the screen like, you know, your ammo count or, you know, your health or other bits of info, just in 3D, those elements in particular are just really up there up close and just provides a nice sense of separation between those HUD elements and the rest of the game.
All right, let's switch gears one more time and get back into the different modes. So in the beginning in your overview, you talked a little bit about multiplayer. A lot of people are wondering what sort of incentives there will be to play as a team or a squad rather than just having everyone go around lone wolfing it on the battlefield.
Yeah, there's a number of incentives. I mean, I think the number one incentive is something that, you know, everyone gets, which is, you know, when it comes to performing the objectives and just really trying to win the battle, I think that we reward players who work together as a group. That certainly applies in suppression as well as the objective-focused game modes. You know, being that we're a game that's more tactical in nature, we have more believable damage system and movement and, you know, spawning mechanics, that it is imperative if you want to be the best team that you can be, that you really watch each other's back and work together as a group. And I think we definitely reward players with victory for working together as a group. And getting into, you know, the specific game modes themselves, like I mentioned, if you want to be the guy that's going to grab the valuable intel or going to get the control point or plant the beacon to call in the airstrike, or you're the bomb technician and bomb squad, all of those key actions within the game are best supportive if you have a group of guys working with you. So I think what we've certainly seen in the past in SOCOM games that are very team-focused, and something we're seeing in SOCOM 4, is that the teams that really work together and collaborate, have those ad hoc tactics, are the ones that are really going to be the most successful. So that's probably the biggest reward, is just the reward of victory. But within the game, at a more of a low level, we have, you know, some smaller rewards as well. The fact that, you know, for example, in the bomb squad game, if you're on the team with the bomb technician and you stay with him, we're actually giving you an armor bonus. So it incentivizes players to actually stay with that guy. And then we also have different ways you can earn airstrikes in the game. And depending on the game mode, in some cases we reward those based on team-based behaviors. So doing key things in the game that really are benefiting the team and the key objective as a whole.
I guess along those same lines with the multiplayer, a lot of people were wondering, you know, they were saying that SOCOM has been one of the more, the franchise in general has had some of the more replayable shooters ever released, and they asked, how do you deal with the pressures of past success, and how does the team plan on keeping this tradition alive with SOCOM 4?
Well, it's definitely a tradition that we want to keep alive. I mean, I think the key is we want to look at the past and see, you know, what were the main reasons that we had great replayability in the old games. And I think when you analyze single player and multiplayer, you have to look at them differently. I think with single player, it's all about AI. It's all about AI and just the kind of, again, the dynamic behaviors that they have. If you have a game where, you know, the AI is essentially running the same script every time, and you can always know where he's going to be at every time, and his combat behavior is always going to be the same thing each time through, I think that that obviously doesn't lend itself as well to replayability or even, you know, the authenticity angle. So with AI, if you really want players to keep coming back, you want to mix and match the scenarios. You want to give them something unique each time they come through. You want to catch them off guard and leave them pleasantly surprised at how the game almost played them differently that time. And so I think that that's certainly been the emphasis point when it comes to replayability for both single player and on the online co-op, is making sure that AI is very dynamic. With regards to multiplayer, I think it's all about, you know, the execution of the game modes themselves, the maps, and having lots of custom options. I think certainly anytime you have a great map and a great mode, you can leave it to the community to find their own ways to essentially, you know, create their own war stories and find ways to keep coming back and leveraging new tactics. And that's something we've seen, is, you know, people will keep coming back to those same maps and modes and getting something unique from it each time. So first off, you have to execute on those two fundamental elements when it comes to multiplayer. In addition to that, though, we want to have a lot of custom options for them to be able to tweak their online gameplay. And I think this is a particular point that we've emphasized more in SOCOM 4, because obviously we want to do great maps and great modes, and that's something we're continuing. But I think the custom options is been a focal point to take that replayability in multiplayer to the next level. So if I could expand upon that a bit, earlier I referenced that, you know, when you come into online multiplayer, there's three primary ways to play the game. You have standard, you have classic, and then the third one is called custom. We're doing something unique with custom, where custom will consist of a number of different, essentially remixes of game types based on feedback we get from the community. So an example of this would be, within the custom option, you might have a remix variant of Bomb Squad game type. We've actually interacted with the community via polls and voting and other methods. What we hear, you know, what kind of custom options would you like to see changed for a variant on Bomb Squad? And this might be anything from maybe they want to see the movement speed turned up, turned down. We can adjust the damage. We can have damage reduction or make the damage even much more lethal. We can make it respawn and non-respawn, adjust the timers, adjust whether there's health regeneration on or off. So we have all these different switches that we can change, which we have defaults for in classic and the standard mode. But again, based on the community, the feedback, as well as just kind of what we're observing in the game, we can take that feedback and then populate these new lists. So, and I didn't mention before also weapon set. So, you know, again, if you want to do like a snipers and shotguns only match, you can do that as well. So I think this is a great way to keep the gameplay fresh and stay very connected to the community and what they'd like to see.
All right, so we have about 10 minutes left. I think we're going to open it up for a short Q&A in case anybody else has any questions that we haven't already posed. So let me unmute everybody participating. And then obviously there's quite a few people on the call, so if you all start speaking up at once, we won't be able to hear you. So hopefully we'll be able to do this one at a time. Let me unmute.
Hello.
The host is undone. Listen only.
Can you just talk, you know, say who you are, introduce yourself, and pose your question?
Hi, this is Paul Pierce with Fanboy Gaming.
Hi there.
A lot of the multiplayer community and SOCOM veterans have asked me to ask you guys, are there gonna be any pistols in the game?
In SOCOM 4, we do not have pistols. We've opted instead to go with a system where we have two primary weapons that the player can take. And so an example of this would be when you'd be in single player or in multiplayer, you could, say, go into a mission with an assault rifle and, as your backup, a shotgun. And we felt this gives you a lot more tactical options when it comes to dealing with a level that has a variety of different environmental elements. For example, a particular level might have a wide open area where you'd want to use more of a long range weapon, and then maybe it gets into more close quarters area, like some sort of an urban environment or inside of a building, where you'd want to be able to switch to your backup, which is more suited for close quarters combat. The other reason we did this is to leverage off a system we have in single player called the Active Armory, which is a system aimed to support this fiction of the team being immersed in this six-day battle and being outnumbered and outgunned and not really having a lot of resupply capability. And so the way the active armory works is, in single player, you will start with a set of weapons in your armory, and if you scavenge an enemy weapon, say an enemy primary weapon, and pick it up and carry it out of the level with you, it will get added to your armory for you to use in later missions. So an example would be, say you're playing a single-player mission, you have your weapons, and you come across an enemy with a really good machine gun. After you take him out, you can pick up the machine gun, put it on your back, carry it out of the level, and then when you start the next mission, that machine gun is ready to go for you to select and deploy with in the next mission.
Thanks, Travis.
Okay, thank you.
Can I just ask a question? If you're going to ask a question, just mute your phone if it's on speaker afterwards, because we're getting some echo if we're hearing your phone back through the speaker.
My name is Alex. I'm of irrationalpassions.com, and I have a proposal more than a question for Zippers.
Okay.
So our friend Travis of the community we're part of, he created a community event called SOCOM Saturdays, and he says he's offering a personal challenge to the developers and producers, and he wants to put his five best community members up against the five best Zipper SOCOM players.
I'm just going to jump in here. Travis appreciates the offer, but we're time is kind of limited, so we just.
This will be like after lunch.
I understand. If you want, you can shoot me an email afterwards, and I'd be happy to pass on the email to Travis and the guys at Zipper.
All right.
I have a quick question. My name's Angie, and I'm with Off-Duty Gamer. And I was wondering if there were any military consultants that were involved in the making of SOCOM 4 by way of advice on any tactical movements, formations, or weapon specialties?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. We've had a great tradition of working with the U.S. Navy and a number of different advisors on the SOCOM franchise. I think that over the course of making a number of SOCOM games, we've built up a pretty good knowledge of some of these core elements. So we did approach some key situations in SOCOM 4 where we wanted some expert opinion. Particularly with the weapons themselves, early on in the project, I know we had a team of guys that went out to a weapons range and actually had a chance to fire some of the actual real weapons that these guys used. And that also not only gave us a feel for the weapons, but also gave us great audio content so we could actually have realistic sounds for the guns in the game. In addition to that, we have at times leveraged military experts for some of the motion capture to make sure that the animations in the game are authentic. So to that degree, that's been a particularly useful help, making sure that, again, the weapon handling and the movements are realistic to what we see from these special forces units.
I'm just gonna cut in again, guys. If you could take your phone off speaker, we're hearing a lot of feedback and echo. So one of you has your phone on speaker.
All right. This is Paul again with Fanboy Gaming. I have a question about future modes. Will there be any future multiplayer modes?
We don't have any announcements about future content at this time. We're just really focused on SOCOM 4.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, thanks. Come on, Francisco.
Hi, this is Will Manning. Got a quick question.
Sir, you're breaking up.
Okay. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. Being able to properly celebrate the demise of one's enemies is key to maintaining a healthy mental state, which is why I'm sure you guys have added victory dance for multiplayer. Is there anything else that players will be able to use to individualize their avatars online?
Other than victory dances, well, we have a number of character skins that players can choose from. So kind of in the same tradition of the earlier SOCOM games, we have some really iconic characters that you can select from in the armory to play as during the multiplayer matches. And there's a number of ways you can unlock these characters, whether that's playing through key elements of single player or even elements of co-op.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have time for one more.
Can I get in?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, this is Josh from PickyGeeks.com, and I was wondering if SOCOM 4 will be locked at 60 FPS.
Say that one more time.
will it be locked at 60 frames per second?
Travis, did you get that question?
Yeah.
Okay.
The game plays at 30 frames per second.
Okay.
Pretty much consistently. It's not locked at 60.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks for joining. I'm going to put you all back on mute. Check. There we go. Now there's no more.
The host has placed the call in listen-only mode.
Thanks, everybody, for joining. One of us at the agency here will be sending you an email afterwards with your beta key and also a link to be able to download the audio from this recording so you can use it in any podcasts or if you want to transcribe it and use some quotes. And then we'll also send you links to assets. And then if you have any follow-up questions, you can email me, and my email will be in that, the one that you're getting. So thank you, Brian, and thank you, Travis, for taking the time out to talk to everybody. I hope everyone got a lot out of this. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, all.